Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the Kia Sorento. It is Drive Car of the Year. Tell you what, Jared, I've been excited about this interview all week.
As much as you've been excited about the rock climbing, we'll get to that because Jessica Fox joins us from France. Welcome to you, Jess.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, can we just say thank you so much for giving us one of the great highlights of the games. And it was one of the great highlights because it followed one of the greatest downers that we've seen. We were with you all the way in the K1, but to come back and deliver a victory in your first gold medal was just one of the great Olympic moments. So congratulations from everybody listening to this station.
Thank you so much. It was just, yeah, such an unbelievable few days, and the support and the messages I've received and the videos of people watching and just how invested everybody was in that moment was amazing. So I'm so grateful for the love and support coming from back home.
Well, we were on air at the time, and I mean, the devastation for the K1 was palpable.
Oh.
And the euphoria it gave us when you got across the line in extraordinary circumstances was also palpable. So you've experienced the highs and lows, no doubt, of sport right throughout your career. But at this level, it must have been at another level.
Oh, it totally was. I think it was so emotionally charged. Like you said, the kayak was, it was a mix of emotions because obviously I won a bronze medal and that's an amazing achievement, but I was disappointed that I incurred a 2-second penalty and that kept me off the top step of the podium. So I had to really overcome all those emotions and just try and refocus for the C1. And that was probably the hardest moment of my career so far, those sort of 48 hours to get back in the right mindset. And so when I did cross that finish line in the C1, it was just a release of every single emotion possible that it, and all the, you know, all the build up to get to that moment and the dreams for so long to get to that moment. It was just amazing. And obviously all the tears, I've heard a lot of people shed the tears with me. So yeah, they don't tell you how much you cry at the Olympics. It's just a crazy roller coaster.
Hey Jess, just before I hand you on to Lee, on the K1, which was still an amazing effort, the bronze, as you said, Jared, I think 5 minutes after we led the show with you missed by the skin of your chin. Can I just ask you, did you, for us, it was almost impossible, Jared, to actually see the contact.
Yep.
But Jess, you must have known in the moment you would have felt it, I guess.
Yeah, I did. But to be honest, it started earlier in the run. I had a touch on gate 4, I think it was. And then I lost a little bit of time in the middle section, but I just fought the whole way down. I was like, I'm not letting this one go. I'm not giving up, even though it's not the perfect run that I was dreaming of. And so I came into that last upstream gate, gate 24, which is going to haunt me for a while, I think. And I came in a little bit too tight, a little bit too impatient, I think. And I felt the touch on, I think it was my helmet or my chin. And yeah, look, it's one of those moments that you replay in your mind over and over again. I should have done this. I could have done that. But you know, that's sport. And I think it's not straightforward, especially in my sport. There are so many things that come into play and that's what makes it exciting too. But yeah, in the end, like I said, I was lucky that I got the bronze medal because I could have easily been fourth. I think I was 0.2 from the fourth place. I was 1 second from the gold medal. So it was a very tight race.
Can I pursue that point, Jess, with your competitive attitude? Do you find in the few days since your Olympic campaign is finished, are you thinking more about the ecstasy of the gold medal or the what ifs of the bronze medal, what the little things that you might have made a difference? Which ones have stayed with you the most?
Oh, definitely the gold medal moment. I think it was made so much sweeter because of the kayak, I think. You know, the moment and all the mental energy and the mental strength it took to get to that C1 final, you know, to win the semi and then to go off last in the final, that build-up was just so intense and so incredible. So I've definitely left with that joy and elation of crossing the finish line in the canoe as opposed to the disappointment and hurt from the kayak. I think it's easier to digest now the kayak once I have a gold medal to look at.
That sports, I mean, when all of us are laymen at the sports we watch at the Olympics, but your particular sport, like most, like it's one every sort of split second at a time and leaving behind what's just happened. That staying in the moment specifically must be just so critical in what you do.
Oh, definitely. I think as soon as you dwell on a mistake or, you know, think, oh, I can't believe I just did that, or the water wasn't working for me there, then you've already lost your focus and you've lost your concentration on the next gate and the next stroke and the next move. So it does come into play a lot. You've got to stay focused and in the moment and just focus on what you need to do next, what the next gate is. And sometimes, you know, in that C1 run, for example, I was so in flow. It's that flow state that athletes talk about when things are almost in slow motion and you feel things coming and you notice things that you might not notice and everything's reacting perfectly. So, you know, some days it works out like that day, and other days it's not perfect like in the kayak.
Speaking to our greatest ever paddler, Jess Fox, who recently became a gold medalist after becoming another bronze medalist at the Olympics. Jess, so for those that don't know, you're French-born, born in Marseille, your mother's French, dad British. Jared, she's in a little town at the moment called Epinal, which I'm obviously pronouncing horribly. It's in far eastern France.
Right.
It's probably closer to, as I have a look on a map here, it's closer to Zurich and Stuttgart than it is to actually Paris. Mm. It's a very small population. What are the main things to do in Epinal, Jess? What are we doing over there at the moment, apart from relaxing and having the medals up on the wall somewhere?
The pronunciation was perfect. I'll give you that. It's a small city. My boyfriend is actually from here, so he came and picked me up from Paris, and we've come to his parents' place, and we're spending a few days here before heading down to my family in Marseille in the south of France. And I mean, on a beautiful day, there are some amazing bushwalks to do, which I was hoping to do, but the weather's not great.
Oh,
it's a bit of a downer, actually. It's like 14 degrees. But look, I'm catching up on sleep and spending time with family, which is lovely. And it's nice to be out here. And I would have loved to come home to Australia, but unfortunately with the quarantine and the lockdown, it meant that it would have made it very hard to get back over here for the rest of the season. So I've got a few races coming up in end of August and September, and the World Cup events and the World Championships. So back into it after a few weeks of rest.
That's how you know she's not from Melbourne. Jared, is it 14 degrees? Is bad weather?
Yes, I was going to say, we'd kill for 14 right now at this stage, Jessica. Can I just compare?
I know I shouldn't say that. It is summer in Europe. So
yes, it is indeed.
Better.
True.
Can I compare notes with you, Jess? Because I know what I was thinking as you were paddling after the last gate down to the finishing line in the canoe. What were you thinking at that stage?
Just trying to stay focused, stay in the moment, not get too carried away. I was thinking, just clear this gate, do not touch this gate. And if you rewatch the video, I'm not as tight as I could have been on that last upstream gate, because I really wanted to be as safe as possible and just charge to that finish line. I had no idea what the time would be. I knew that Mallory Franklin had set a really good time in the canoe, and so I had to chase that. And it was a different race in a way compared to the kayak, because in the kayak I knew that the time that was leading wasn't as good as the time I'd done in the semi. So I knew in C1 I had to give it absolutely everything and I had no margin for error. So I was really, really trying to be careful and give it absolutely everything. So I left it all out there, my heart and soul and all my energy.
Well, it was sort of like what we were thinking, but this was a real education process for our much younger team here, because I was thinking something along the lines of Jessica Fox on the run, you screamed and everybody comes a running. Take a run and hide yourself away. Fox is on the run. Fox on the run. How many times, Jessica, have you heard that song in the last week?
Not that many times.
Gee,
but,
that's your anthem.
It's definitely come up. It's not the first time. I'm loving all the puns as well. I think there's been some great puns and great headlines as well. So, it's something my dad said. He was commentating the race as well, and he did mention that to me at the end.
Now, Jess, we need to get to your dad, because your dad is either the calmest person the world has ever seen, or he's got a resting heart rate of about 18, or both. Because I think if anyone else in the country had their daughter paddling for an Olympic medal, they wouldn't have been half as calm as he was.
I know. I don't know how he did it. I think I need to learn from him to calm my nerves out for when I'm paddling. But he I guess for him, it was his performance moment too. You know, he was in his zone for the commentary. So maybe, like, that's really good that he was able to regulate his emotions. But you can hear it at the end of my race. He sort of goes really quiet and he's choking up a bit and he's just saying, wow. And that's all he can get out. But yeah, look, he is quite a calm, cool, collected person in general. But yeah, I know that he definitely shed a few tears and he did struggle to keep it together. He told me he was losing it quietly.
Well, Jessica, it's great to know that a person who's provided one of the most beautiful moments at the Olympics sounds like a beautiful person.
Absolutely.
As well as a great athlete. Congratulations. Enjoy what is in front of you for the rest of your career, but you'll always look back on this moment as being one of the great moments for all Australians in the Tokyo Olympics. Well done.
Thank you so much for your kind words. It means a lot.
Oh, Jess Fox there, our greatest Olympic paddler, and hard to imagine, Jared, that she was as good an interviewer as she is an athlete.
Yeah, absolutely magnificent. And hard to imagine when I rang Lee Matthews today that he was singing this song. Would have been one of your favourites back in the 80s, Lee Sweet and Lee Matthews.
Absolutely. No, it's such a fine line. You see it in the Olympics. There's so many events on in such a short period of time. You know, the ecstasy of the winner and the despair of the loser. Yeah. I mean, we see it in grand finals, and every week you have that degree in our local team sports. But it just is so pointed in the Olympics of how close it is to the ultimate up or the ultimate down.
How would you deal, Lee, if you're in the 100 metres final and some bloke came out with a red card and you didn't even get to run?
Yeah, well, but that happens because you've made a mistake, obviously. So I think they know that if you break, you're out. So they know that going in, that's the rules in that sport. But that is and we talk about the 50-metre penalty being a big penalty. Oh. That's a big penalty, isn't it? A big penalty.
And that was a big interview. And I bet the only thing better than winning those medals, Jared, will be enjoying them, travelling down to the south of France. Yeah. Would there be a better place in the world to enjoy it with their boyfriend? Wow, what a great chat that was with Jess. More Sports Day with Lee Matthews after this. You are listening to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Cairnsar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy. And across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. Huge hour coming up. We're going to go back to the Washington Post columnist himself, Barry Sraluga, who was awesome last week on the show. Jared talking all things, not just in the pool, but America. Plenty to talk about from an American point of view, given Simone Biles was back last night. But I think we should get straight into it because it's a massive night coming up.
Well, for both the Boomers and shortly for the Opals.
Yeah, well, the Opals had to win by, 25 last night to stay in it. They won by 27. They keep their hopes alive. It's been a little bit different for the Boomers, who are 3-from-3 and looking really impressive. Yep. And with the result going the way it did with Team USA coming from behind to beat Spain today, Jared, if we can get over Argentina tonight.
Yeah, we've got the dream team.
We've got the dream team. A man who starred so many times for the Boomers. In fact, I think started his Boomers career back in Athens in 04. A man that we all know on this show. By the name of Andrew Bogut joins us to preview the match. Andrew, welcome to you.
What's going on, fellas?
Well, we just want to get the insight from you and the crystal ball prediction from you with what's going to happen tonight and how we face up against Argentina.
Look, we're heavy favourites, obviously, but bookies and everybody else, but Argentina are a well-oiled machine, and they're not going to beat themselves. So some concerns that we've had in the first three games, even though we've won those first three, I think we got a little lucky against Nigeria. We need to clean up the turnovers at our end when we have the ball, and we need to clean up our defensive rebounding. So if we are not great tonight in that, Argentina will punish us. So we need to just clean those up. Argentina won't beat themselves, but you know, if we give them a chance to stay in games, it could be closer than we'd like.
So, Andrew, just on that first one, we've spoken to you and we've spoken to Chris Anstey about this turnover stuff, and it's been a bit of a theme. What is it about us, or what do you think we need to do? What would be the message in order to actually stop these turnovers with the ball? Are we rushing?
Oh, don't throw it to the other team would be good. But look, it's tough. The opening game of the Olympics is always tough because you're feeling each other out. It's kind of the nerves. It's just always a weird feeling that first game until you settle in. So you understand that one, but we just haven't really cleaned it up throughout. We got better in against Italy to an extent, but even against Germany, we had some lulls. So it's just being solid. We have a couple of guys that love getting in the paint. It's making that right decision when you get 2 feet in the key way. And sometimes it's just as simple as kicking out to an open shooter. But Those live ball turnovers, which funnily enough, we thrive off. Defensively, we're probably one of the best defensive teams in the Olympics, and our offense thrives off getting stops from Matisse Thybulle, getting a deflection, and then we're out in transition getting easy baskets. On the flip side, if we do that, then we're giving a team like Argentina, that's not really a fast-breaking team, probably some easier looks.
Andrew, how are you dealing with retirement? You bled unbelievably many times for the Boomers, and this is your first time as a spectator. How's it sitting?
Oh, it's bittersweet. It's a good question because I've thought about it at length. I go through lulls watching, like, oh, I wish I was there. Oh, actually, no, I don't. As yep. I get up off the couch, my back hurts, you know. So it's a tough one. It's mainly, you know, it's so close to me because I played with all these guys yep. and I would have been in this squad. So I think the next Olympics and the one after will be a little bit easier as we go along because you won't have that connection. But that deep connection that I have makes it much harder. But unfortunately, with coronavirus and my body getting older and all that, I made that decision, you know, 18 months ago now. And it's still the right decision in my mind, even though there's days where you think you can go.
Speaking of Aussie basketball, great Andrew Bogut, who's now plying his trade and very, very well, I might add, Jared, as a special comments man for Channel 7 next to the great John Casey, who's calling well. Hey, Andrew, I know it's a bit of a weird question asking if we've missed Ben Simmons, given that we've never really had him. But how
That's
have
not
you...
a weird question. That's exactly what I would have liked to have asked.
How have you seen the team without him as compared to how you'd have expected it to see it with him in it?
Well, I think you answered your own question. We don't know what we're missing because we've never had it. So, you know, I've been asked that a fair few times.
Thought it was a weird question, Jared.
Yeah, no, it's a talking point. I get it, but it's kind of hard because we don't know. You know, we don't know what it's like to date the pretty girl until we've dated her, essentially. So it's just one of those things. We'd love to have him, but you know, a priority for him is not the Australian Boomers at this point in his career.
Do you think it will be at any stage, or is he? Do you think he's drawn his line in the sand?
I don't think he's drawn his line in the sand. The problem is there's just layers of people you have to go through to even get to Ben. And I don't know if that's by design by him or if it's his family or if it's the consultants he has. And you got to literally jump five layers to get an answer sometimes. And that's hard. That's very, very hard to deal with as a national team. We'd love to have him play. He's got bigger problems. I think he's out of Philadelphia. From what I hear, he's gone. No matter what happens, he's going to be on a different team next season. Hasn't been in touch with the organization since the day the season ended. So he's got bigger fish to fry at the moment. But yeah, look, we'd love to have him. Of course, one of the best, if not, he's going to go down as the greatest Australian NBA player ever when he retires. And we'd love to have him in a Boomer jersey.
What did you make of Spain USA today?
Yeah, game of two halves. I feel like Spain shot themselves in the foot in the first quarter. They played a really good, even first half, sorry. They played a really good 16 minutes. And in the last 4 minutes, they took their foot off the gas and made a few silly errors. And USA, you know, they cut that lead down to a tight game at halftime. That's where they lost it, I think. And then they couldn't reel after that. And it seems like US in that second half, both the last two games, Czech Republic and Spain, have found something ball movement-wise. They're starting to figure it out on the run. And at the end of the day, you have Kevin Durant. You can have a shocking offensive possession. You throw it to Kevin Durant, and he's going to get you a good shot no matter what. So a great luxury to have. They're going to be tough to beat regardless. I feel like they're starting to surge a little bit and get better and better as the games go on.
And the Opals, where do you see them at the moment at this part of the campaign?
Being honest, they're up against it. Yeah. They've got, you know, a small percentage chance to get through, in my opinion. I want the girls to get through, obviously. I'm not saying I'm not a supporter. So for everyone listening, don't jump all over me. But a tough task to beat that USA team. They haven't lost since, 20, 30 years in Olympic Games. Mm. Just an unbelievable stat. I think mentioned it on the podcast, actually, had Luke Longley on a couple of days ago. I think it's 50 or 60 straight wins. It's something crazy like that. And for the Opals to do that without Liz Cambidge is going to be tough. You know, she's obviously one of the best players in the world, and they don't have her in that lineup to kind of mitigate some of that superstardom. And that's just the reality they're dealing with. But look, I hope you know, we watched that game and did a surprise, but I just, you know, I don't see it.
Yeah, I think controversy aside, Jared, you and I have spoken a number of times that Liz Cambidge not being on the court has just really, really hurt them purely as a basketball team.
It's pretty hard to argue any other way.
Gone under the radar a little bit. Andrew, really looking forward to your call tonight. I think we start at, 10 o'clock Australian time. So can't wait for you and JC to bring us the latest on court. And let's hope we're in a semi-final.
Yeah, I need a few more coffees. It's a late call for me, so I'm not used to this. So it's a rookie night for me. I have two or three more espressos on the way there and should be right.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Bogut there, Australian basketball royalty, of course. Although the last time we spoke to Elliot, he was on an RDO.
Yes, he was.
And he'd already an RDO down, during the Olympics.
And he'd been down Media Street.
Can you imagine that, an RDO during the Olympics? Imagine Jared actually. You at the Sydney Olympics. Sorry, I can't cover the volley, no, the beach volleyball off. Grand gold day medal off. Match. Actually, an RDO, I'm going to go have a swim.
What a joke.
Let's hope we beat Argentina. Jared, you start and watch it?
Yeah, I'll
did
have
you
a
start and watch the Opals last night? Get over the line?
I did not.
They were pretty good late. They
I
needed to be.
11 o'clock.
What about the Matildas being robbed?
Yeah.
That disallowed goal from Sam Kerr, it was a great finish late in the first half. Jared, I've watched that replay 20 times and I can't see the foul in the build-up. It's the weirdest call I've seen in soccer.
So there's been a foul call on the foul call.
Foul call on foul call. Originally, I thought they called offside.
Yeah.
And then the referee said, no, I called a block.
Yep.
I've zoomed in.
Why didn't the arc...
I've asked for the behind-the-goals vision.
Why didn't the arc come through?
Yeah, so that for me was the weirdest thing, the VAR.
Yep.
I think the referee would argue that she called it before the free kick was taken. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We lost and we're out. And that's not good. Hey, what is good is the Furphy unbelievable moment. I think it can only go to one person the last week and a half, and that's Emma McKeon. She won an incredible 7 medals. She might go down as one of our greatest ever Olympian.
Might?
Well, sorry, she probably will go down as our greatest ever Olympic swimmer, and she might go down as one of our greatest ever Olympians ever.
Well, she's not might. She is.
She's yeah, got seven
a hell
medals.
Of, she's got a hell of a medal package.
I know, but I've got a bit of time.
Yeah.
I've got another...
Well, give me the
30
me
or
your,
40.
Give
Olympics.
Me your greatest Olympian right now.
Thorn Fraser?
No.
Torpedo?
It's an equestrian. Some would argue, Scoop, it's an equestrian called Andrew Hoy, who at 62 years of age has picked up another 2 medals, a silver and a bronze. I think for a tally of 8. I might be wrong, but around 8. Mm-hmm. And he is talking about going to Gay Paris as a 66-year-old.
He's older than you.
Indeed.
Why aren't you out there winning medals for us?
Well,
you could be winning medals in the sailing.
In the sailing, no.
You could be.
No, I couldn't be doing the sailing. I'm trying to work out what I could be doing it in.
Beach volleyball?
No, the legs are gone. Some the sort Achilles
of,
is gone.
Some sort of swimming event. What's that? Surfing. Yeah. Oh, of course, surfing.
Oh, jeez.
What am I doing? Jeez.
At least I would have a crack.
Oh, we're getting a bit loose here on this Wednesday. Let's take a break. More sports after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021 and across Tasmania for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Barry Sraluga, Jared, is a man that was so good when we had him on last week.
You decided to give him another run, and I don't blame you.
We thought we have to go back to the well. For those who don't know, Washington Post columnist, frequent front pager for the Washington Post, which is no mean feat. And fair to say, Jared, while we have been basking in the glory of our Olympic campaign as Australians, there have been several significant news stories to come out of this Olympics, one of which is how Tokyo has dealt with COVID. I think we've had 25 athletes now test positive.
Yep.
And the other one, I think, from an athlete's perspective, has been the story of Simone Biles.
That has been a challenging story, Scoop, and no more challenging than a number of stories that have come through. I think that the original decision was divisive, probably running at about 75-25, support four.
Yep.
But I think we were all challenged when she came straight back into the team and she's going in on the balance beam. Let's find out what it's been like over in the United States. Barry Sraluga, Washington Post columnist, joins us on the line. Barry, welcome once again. This would have challenged a lot of people. I'd be interested in your thoughts on how it unfolded.
Well, I mean, you guys are right. It's a complex story. And I was here the night of the team competition when she didn't look right and she ultimately stepped away. I mean, I think one thing that has to be accounted for in analyzing this story is, you know, I don't know if you guys play golf, but if you play golf and you're standing over a 4-foot putt and you're in that mental space where you're like, I have zero chance of making this putt. You have the yips. That affects you and the ball and the match you're playing, and that's it. If you get the yips as a gymnast, you're talking about not being able to feel where your body is when you're 10 or 12 or 15 feet above the ground, you have no sense of where you are, and therefore you have no sense of how you're going to land. That night, she was putting herself, or she felt like she was putting herself in danger, and she was putting her team at a disadvantage by not being able to pull off the stunts that are, you know, required of a world-class gymnast. It's been a struggle since then. The other apparatuses all require that sort of level of twisting and tumbling. Vault, she skipped out on. Floor exercise, she skipped out on. The uneven bars, she skipped out on. I'm no gymnastics expert by any stretch, but the people who I'm here with, who I trust on it, say that the tasks on beam, which is what she's going to contest tonight, are a lot simpler. The main challenge is they're done on a 4-inch wide beam. So it's been a huge discussion in the States about mental health, about taking care of yourself, about athletes being able to decide for themselves. It kind of comes to a dramatic conclusion tonight because she is deciding to compete.
So, Jared, and all our listeners, just to give some context here, and Barry's talking about the yips as a comparison. Simone actually wrote in the last 36 hours, I think, on Instagram that she's suffering from the twisties, and essentially saying that for anyone saying that I quit, I didn't quit. My mind and body are not in sync, as you can see here. I don't think you realise how dangerous this is on a hard/competition surface.
Yeah, and I think that was all well and good and well explained, and I think did give perspective to the whole thing. I must admit, though, Barry, when I heard that she was coming back and competing in the balance beam, I had a difference of opinion on the safety issues, and quite clearly that's been well and truly documented in the pages, and I'm sure social media's gone nuts with it. But, I mean, the balance beam, whilst the activities may not be as twistified as some of the other events, it's certainly a pretty hard beam. My old experience as a phys ed teacher is you can do some damage on a balance beam.
Well, for sure. And it's, I'm not discounting it as an exercise itself in the difficulty and the potential danger. I'm saying what I've been told is that by comparison, it's not the same. And I think there is room for all sides on this discussion. And I think where I've come down on it is simultaneously, you're able to at the same time believe you can take care of yourself from a mental health perspective. You can honestly evaluate yourself in the moment and say you're not able to go. And that can be admired for taking control and speaking up for yourself in a world where, certainly in Olympic gymnastics, that hasn't been the case for a long, long time. Coaches have, you know, frankly, bullied little girls into doing things that have broken their bodies. You can believe all that it's empowering for an athlete to take control of themselves, and then simultaneously admire an athlete who might wobble mentally or might be fighting something physically and fights through it. I think there's more space for both of those things now than there was, you know, maybe even a year ago.
I think it's really, really challenging because I think there isn't an athlete, and put yourself into a team sports perspective, the quarterback, or in our game, the centre half forward, who turns up on grand final day or the final day of the NFL, and he's all of a sudden has a panic attack, or he's got absolute nerves.
Yeah, like 2 minutes into Super Bowl and
well, suddenly 2 minutes in, but I mean, I can remember some of the best players I played with, Scoop, vomiting 20 seconds before they went out. Now, the question is going to be, when do you pull the pin and when do you not pull the pin? When do you actually...
But only she can know that, can't you, Jared,
well,
ultimately?
Yeah, but I'm wondering whether or not, you know, the bar for pulling the pin gets down to a level where you don't draw on resilience. You basically listen to your body. Your body's telling you, don't go out there. You're afraid of the result. You're doing this and you're doing that. And therefore, you make the wrong decision. Now, I'm not saying she made the wrong decision. She's
made the
right decision.
No, you're just asking the question. Yeah,
I just wonder where this ends and where this finishes, Barry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's evolving, right? And I think what's happening is, and I don't want to lean too much on this, but I think what we're seeing is the athletes being more in control of this decision than outside forces.
Yep.
And by that, I mean, not just coaches, and you should listen to your coaches, and coaches should be motivators, but they should also be sensitive to where their athlete is at that moment. And I do think the dynamic is different. I'm not going to overstate how much I know about gymnastics, but I will say that for years and years and years, kind of a study encouraged in the United States when we thought about gymnastics was a gymnast named Carrie Strug in 1996, who had to do a vault to help her team win gold. She was on a severely compromised ankle, and her, she was 14 years old, and her she was 18 years old, and her adult male coach said, "You have to do it. You have to do it. And at the time, she pulled it off, and she's hobbled and she's hurt, and she did it. And this was, sweeping admiration for courage. If you watch the tape now, it looks almost like bullying, because some of that is the dynamic. It's, it's not a grown person who's in the position and is able to say no.
Yep.
It very much felt like the power dynamics were off there. So if you then jump forward to 2021, Simone Biles, a 24-year-old woman who is making a decision for herself, there is something there that I think is an evolution in how we think about these things. That doesn't mean that if somebody faces those same things and pushes through them, you can't admire them. I come back to that idea that there's the ability for the two worlds to coexist.
So we'll move on. The U.S. women's soccer team lost in the semifinals to Canada last night. They were the short prize favourites. How was that received, given that the northern neighbour has taken the points?
Yeah, that's 20 years since the U.S. women's national team has lost to Canada, although they've had some stirring matches, including in the semifinals in London 9 years ago. There's a couple ways to look at it. One, the rest of the world is catching up to the Americans in women's football. There's no question about that. That's been true going back to, 2000, when they did not win the Women's World Cup. They lost in the quarterfinals in Rio. But I also think this is a transition time for this roster. They've brought a very, very old team to Tokyo. Half the 18 players who dressed last night were over 30 years of age.
Yep.
Carly Lloyd, a mainstay, is 39. Megan Rapinoe, a star, is 36. This results with really, really uneven play from that group, including a draw to Australia, in which both teams were kind of playing very, very cautiously because they knew they could get through with a draw. It just wasn't the brand of football that we have been accustomed to seeing from this group. Very aggressive, very sure-minded, and crisp. It was hesitant. It was sloppy. It was slow at times. So it's an interesting time for the American women's side, because there's a transition coming, and it has to happen sooner rather than later.
Jared, I think Barry might have been gotten to by someone high up at the US soccer team. Because he's talking about transition. And you know as well as I do, when a coach comes out here in our game and says, "Oh, we're a list in transition," it's like, hang on.
Promised us a gold medal, mate.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just being silly, Barry. I'm trying to get under your skin because we're trying to take a bronze medal off you in that match. So let's hope we do so, huh?
Well, that'd be a big one, right? I mean, I think if you're in Australia right now, if you take down the U.S. women for a bronze medal, that's a major accomplishment. And I would say, guys, I'm the one introducing the idea of transition. That the U.S. women's coach was saying, "No, we brought the right roster here, okay. And we should." And what does that say? It says to me he didn't do a very good job getting to his players. So
what it says to me, Barry, is he's not as smart as you are. And you watch next week; he'll be talking transition.
Yeah.
Can I ask you about the transition? Like, is your athletics team really disappointing or just disappointing? Because every time I've watched Olympics, and I've watched too many, the United States team basically
dominates
or goes close to. Right now, you've won one gold medal.
I think it's disappointing. I mean, there was a world in which you thought that the Americans could sweep the sprints on both sides, maybe everything from four down to one, maybe even eight, 800 down to 100. And that's obviously not not playing out. Just earlier today, I don't know if you guys saw just the thrilling 400 meter hurdles race where Rye Benjamin of the United States broke the world record. The problem is the Norwegian running right next to him broke the mark by, you know, three quarters of a second. Yeah. So there's been some thrilling, I have not been out to track yet. So I'm going tomorrow night. So I'll have a little bit more of a feel for it, but you're right. If you look at those results and, you know, that's what we do at the Olympics. Look at the results. The American track and field team is underperforming expectations at the moment.
I won't keep you much longer, Barry, but just your insight into two challenging things that have come up with the Olympics. Do you think the high jumpers should have split the gold? And do you think in the finals of the sprint events, there should be at least one or two breaks for the athletes to get a little bit nervous and not be sent home?
So I think on the first issue, I would just say I was surprised that that was even an option. Yep. It's like, you know, I don't know if you guys have big betting pools on tournaments in Australia, but like in the US, if you're, you know, if you've come down to a season long bet and the stakes are very high and the pool is quite large, sometimes two of the competitors who remain will say, hey, let's just split the pot. I didn't know that was an option for Olympic gold. I thought that there should have been a jump off. Those guys are obviously friends. They have competed against each other, but they're quite close. I don't have any problem with giving two golds in a situation where two swimmers touch the wall at the exact same time down to the 100th, or two sprinters cross the line at the exact same time down to the 100th. I thought that was an odd, I don't know that I have a real, I'm not walking away saying this is an injustice. I just thought it was an odd way to end the competition.
Yeah, that's why, Barry, you're very smart, man.
On the sprinters, let's have some, you want the maximum, the best performance you can get. So I'd be in favor of some breaks in there.
Barry, great to have you on. We will touch base with you at the end of the tournament and when the Matildas, our soccer team, are bronze medalists.
Congratulations to them in advance.
Very clever.
Barry Sviluga there, Washington Post columnist extraordinaire. And I like Jake Nowell's column in The Age today. The absurdity of athletes sharing gold medals. It's very well penned.
So what do you do, Scoop, if two athletes hit the pool wall at the same time?
It's completely different. You give two gold medals. That's not sharing gold medals. You both finish first.
Right. So on a countback,
these two,
you've gone, had the countback.
These two had the option.
They are equal.
No, they've got to have a jump off.
Okay. Oh. If you can see the difference, that's fantastic.
What?
I can't.
What do you mean? One's choosing it.
Zoe's with me.
Zoe, who are you actually with?
Zoe's with me.
She's with me.
I don't mind them sharing the medal.
There you go.
More sports after
up
this.
You, Jake.